right, this is Pure Decking for Thursday, November the 16th, 2014, 2017. I'm Morps, and this is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, pointing out how rigged the game is, and acknowledging the fact that I've had an absolutely shitty day. Tonight, we have Madman. Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Oatrageous Oat Whiskey.
Fancy. BSV, what are you drinking?
I'm back to the classic Angry Orchard.
After Madman, if you guys were talking it up so much last week, I went and got some Lion and Flugel's Snowdrift Vanilla Porter.
So, and how do you like it?
I do like it. It's good. I like Arrogant Bastard better, but it's still good. It's cheaper than Arrogant Bastard, so that helps.
Anyone with the catchphrase of fuzzy yellow beers for pussies has got to be loved.
Yeah. It has been a day, though, I'll tell you what.
Oh, shit, there's a widow. No, I'm not playing a game while on decking. I would never do that to you. I appreciate your show too much.
Yeah. Let's see. I need to find the appropriate... There it is. Yeah. That's not actually the button I meant to hit, but whatever. Can I get the story posted? No. Post the story. Freaking... There we go. So, it has been a fucking day, I tell you what. Anyways, I decided I don't want to talk about that. Let's see. Where are we? I don't have any more banter. Lead story?
Lead story.
Lead story.
All right, lead story. This one is from USA Today. I actually got to this... bouncing around a little bit from an article that Iron Angel sent me in the chat room, which is actually from the Daily Wire, because that linked a couple of other things together. And after bouncing around trying to find the original source, the best I found was this USA Today article. Cyberbullying is not a new phenomenon, but an alarming number of teenagers are anonymously posting mean things online about themselves. About 6% of kids from ages 12 through 17 have bullied themselves digitally, according to research conducted by Samir Hinduta, a professor of criminology at Florida Atlantic University and co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center. It's a new phenomenon, and this is definitely happening for teens across the U.S., Hinduta said. We have a tendency to demonize the aggressor, but in some cases, maybe 1 out of 20, the aggressor and the target are the same. The issue was brought to researchers' attention by the death of Hannah Smith, a 14-year-old from Lincolnshire, England, who hanged herself after months of apparent online harassment. After her death, officials from Ask.fm, a social media site where users can ask each other's anonymous questions, found that 98% of the messages sent to Smith came from the same IP address as the computer she used. Many other sites like Tumblr and the now-defunct Formspring also had an anonymous question feature, which allowed teens to anonymously send themselves hurtful messages and then publicly respond. Researchers are calling this behavior digital self-harm. Really? Well...
I don't know if it'd be digital self-harm. I already know why they're doing it.
Yeah, it's attention-seeking.
Yeah, it's the victim cred. I'm a victim, love me.
Teens who identified as non-heterosexual were 3 times more likely to bully themselves online, while victims of cyberbullying were 12 times more likely to cyberbully themselves. A strong link already exists between physical self-harm and suicide attempts, and researchers are concerned that the same connection could exist with digital self-harm. It could betray suicidal tendencies and lead to suicidal behavior down the line if it's not addressed. I think that's probably going to be a pretty rare case. I think it's attention-seeking, like you were saying, Madman.
Munchausen. Everyone love me.
This is concerning because teen suicide rates have been steadily climbing over the past decade. Suicide rates for girls 15 to 19 doubled from 2007 to 2015, reaching its highest point in 40 years, according to Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Well, highest in 40 years, that's a pretty specific number, which means it's back up to where it was, I guess, 40 years ago.
41 years ago.
Yeah,
and I love where they say doubled. If you pull up the actual number, the double isn't that much of an increase because it was down so much. And there's still far, far below that of boys. Dudes kill themselves.
Perplexing question. Yeah, but usually it's because the boys say, you know, hold my beer or go do something equally stupid.
Well, I've got to look that up. If they taken stupid as suicide, that could be it.
the question perplexing. It's like, hey guys, I'm going to jump into a wood chipper. Watch this.
Wait a minute. Let me turn my camera on. Go ahead.
Yes, we're making light of suicide, and because it's better than getting upset at it. When asked why they engaged in digital self-harm, boys were more likely to say they did it as a joke or to get attention, while girls often said they did it because they were struggling with depression. That's a leap. That's a bit of a gap. How many girls just say, oh, I'm suffering with depression? That's a very clinical thing to say.
It's a clinical thing to say, and I'm not sure how wrong they are. We're sticking kids on birth control, and that shit causes depression.
It's the same phenomenon that's going on. It's akin to physically wanting to feel pain, said Patricia Cavallos, an associate professor of psychiatry at the Washington University School of Medicine. The rates of physical self-harm are similar as well. About 8% of children ages 7 to 16 surveyed in a 2012 study said they'd engaged in physical self-harm or non-suicidal self-injury. There's a growing body of evidence that suggests social media plays a role in increasing mental health issues among young people, also known as no shit, Sherlock.
They're saying the cutters are doing this. The cutters have gone digital.
Well, I'm just wondering, is it better to just, you know, go on a forum and call yourself an asshole or something equally worse, or, you know, actually sitting there with the razor blade going at your arm? I mean, I kind of think the typing one's better, personally.
At least she wore scars.
Cavados, who studies depression-related content on social media, said that said more than likely teens are looking for a response, but peers often ignore posts that may indicate somebody is struggling with mental health problems. These individuals could be at a very vulnerable place, and there's a risk of what could happen next if there is no intervention. The question is, what is the appropriate response when content like this is posted? Well, obviously, you have to send in the SWAT team and Medicaid. Cavados recommends sending private messages encouraging them to seek professional help or getting a trusted adult involved. Tell them to CL, I need an adult. She said more research needs to be done on how best to intervene. Study author Hendrida said he hopes his research into digital self-harm will open up a dialogue about the issue. It's extremely hard because kids are very hesitant to discuss these sort of feelings and struggles, he said. As more educators and parents bring this up as a phenomenon, it would lead to more candid discussion. Okay. This is actually really simple. If you know somebody is posting this shit and you know it's coming from their own stuff, send it to their parents. It'll embarrass the hell out of them, and either one, get them to stop, or two, if there's really something going on, and give them a shot at getting help.
As a broader issue that would fix a lot more things than just this, limit kids' social media.
That's
they don't need
call.
To be on social media. They need to be social. Being on social media isn't being social.
On social, sitting around, all on phones, not talking to each other.
I've been told that doing pure decking episodes does not count as social interaction. By Madman, actually.
Honestly, did you feel more social when we were gaming every week at someone's physical location or hopping on TeamSpeak?
Sard!
Hello.
You just missed the reading of the lead story. What are you drinking?
Nothing right now, but I'll remedy that soon.
Okay.
It'll probably be a shock top.
So, lead story is a new study came out saying that kids are cyberbullying themselves.
What? How does that work?
Well, they're attention-seeking, or they're suicidal.
They're sending each other hate messages on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr.
Okay.
They're saying 6% of kids from ages 12 through 17 have bullied themselves digitally. They're bullied themselves digitally, according to research conducted by Samir Hinjua. I hope I'm saying that name right.
Fake profile and send yourself mean letters or something.
Yep.
Okay.
Go die in a fire, you fag boy.
Yeah. So they might as well just sit there and punch themselves in the dick. It's pretty much doing the same thing. Like, pay attention to me. My dick hurts.
Actually, they're comparing it to that.
Good.
Because apparently that's an indicator that they might kill themselves.
Oh. Okay.
Sorry, you kind of got the Darth Vader thing going on there, dude.
Oh, sorry. Did you, speaking of, like, self-hating or whatever, did you pick up the story about the serial killer that was stalking people on Twitter, I guess?
No, I don't have that one.
I'll see if I can find it.
Okay. So, I don't know. Like I said, I think it's mostly attention-seeking, but... yeah, Madman, you got a good point about letting kids on the internet too soon, because, I don't know, you there's people at work talking about conversations about when they're getting their kids smartphones, and it's like, you know, I don't think a 7-year-old needs an iPhone.
They don't.
I completely agree. It's
high
fucking
school,
stupid.
Maybe. And that's because at that point, I believe the kids should be able to go out on their own without any adults,
or something.
And they'll be contacting me. I mean, not even driving. I think maybe freshmen. At that point, my kid should have been able to prove himself worthy of my trust and show me that he's not going to kill himself or others, or get into a marked van that says candy on the side.
But when it's written in Sharpie, that's kind of a giveaway.
My whole thing about that, too, is they should pay for their own fucking phone. I don't understand why people pay for their kids' phones like that. I didn't get a cell phone until I could pay for it.
Yeah, same here, actually. Yeah, I bought my first phone.
Yeah.
It was considered not important. You're right.
Generally, when we were growing up, the way my parents would get a hold of us if we weren't home, they would call the person we were at.
That's how, you know, people didn't die during the 80s or, you know, the 70s or the 60s because they didn't have a cell phone like that. Like, yeah, everyone's cries, oh, it's for the safety of the kids. Well, you know what? My parents grew up just fine without a cell phone until they were like 50, and they were fine.
BSV, thoughts?
I do agree that people hold cell phones are too early, but I don't know. I kinda don't really have too much of a different opinion. The main story of I'm just slightly confused well, the whole self-harm thing of yell or posting to yourself to hurt yourself. That
well, I'm imagining this is like all those Tumblr blogs like Internet Aristocrat would go make fun of, where they would always have these questions that look obvious, or these scenarios that would only happen so you could, you know, make some political point on the Tumblr about, you know, whatever made up gender you're at today.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm wondering how much of it is that where they're engaging in some kind of a role play fantasy so they can feel they're vindicated or right about something.
Yeah.
And how much of it is, yeah, just attention seeking. Just, well, look, I, you know, somebody's put together a Tumblr where they've come out as gay, so they need somebody to hate on them so they can complain about being oppressed.
Isn't that part of being a teenager is doing shit like that? This is just the next evolution.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Yeah, they quit wearing, you know, they quit doing the goth thing. So now they're just, you know, talking about how terrible they are online using the anonymous tag.
Rather than dye their hair pink and purple and shit, they're just going to call themselves a faggot. I don't know.
What's worse, this or bronies?
Bronies.
Hey, autistic kids need something to do, and a brony has never pissed me off. These are fucking SJWs. They should die in a fire.
Or at least do some more reading and learn how the world works.
Or if they really want to help teens out, what you do is unplug them from computers and smartphones and get them interacting with people. Either get them in a mentoring program where they're learning some skills from someone older, or have them start teen groups for like sports and shit. And I don't mean sign them up for school structured sports, just a bunch of kids out doing something where they're solving their own fucking problems and having fun.
You know, a bunch of kids out playing football, burying the youngest one at the end. It's a ritual.
Yes! That's why? Completely fine.
But Madman, why do people need to be social more than a couple hundred letter or text letters at a time to somebody?
Oh no, Twitter increased the limit now. Now it's like 200 something.
Because we're social animals, and the reason these teenagers are going crazy is the same reason a mouse goes crazy when you stick it in a box by itself and just feed it through a hole. It's because it's not designed for that. Although it's really hilarious to do to a mouse and then introduce it to other mice, they go crazy and attack, especially when you're playing heavy metal music. Not that you would ever want to repeat these types of experiments.
You mean I shouldn't have been doing these experiments on human-sized animals?
Yes, we'll call them human-sized animals and not humans, BSV. And I think it's an open experiment, and it was started by Zuckerberg.
Oh.
It's called a legal loophole.
So, anyways, I don't know. I just, it's interesting that they're, and I guess it wouldn't be that hard to look into if you, like, picked an account where you saw somebody getting harassed just to go check the logs and see where it's coming from.
Ooh, Anita Sarkeesian.
Well, it depends on whether or not they know what a proxy server is, right? So,
I don't know if she does, but I still say check it.
I mean, private internet access is like $45 a year. You know, and you can come out of a whole bunch of different IPs doing that. Or, I mean, you know, you always go for Tor, but it's a little bit slower. And, you know, the Tor IPs are often blocked, so. But, and there are plenty of ways, if you know what you're doing, to hide that you're, they call it sock puppeting for a reason. But at the same time, the assumption is kind of that these kids don't know what they're doing. They're just, you know, kids online on Tumblr or something. I guess Tumblr's is the new GeoCity, isn't it?
I can see that, I guess.
I mean, all that weird shit that used to be on GeoCities now seems like it's on Tumblr, so I don't know.
People just need a place to go and bitch.
Yeah. I can see that.
So, Sard, do you have a Tumblr?
Yes, you can find it at tumblr.com/IamAttackHelicopter.
Yeah! Oh, I set up a custom URL for mine, lemonparty.org.
Oh, damn it. That would be a good one, too.
What's the other one? Are you always used to post My Lazy Sundays or something like that?
Yeah, that's Fox. He has all those horrible websites locked away in his memory.
Well, he would. So,
hornymanatee.com. Everyone loves hornymanatee.
I don't think I know that one. I'm afraid.
All right, let's get that live reaction. Go ahead, Sard. Go to hornymanatee. Let's just hear the pain. Let's hear that pain ooze through that microphone.
Okay.
I figured we'd wait and, you know, stick it at the end of a Rickroll or something.
Oh, the new Rickroll. It plays about 10 seconds of Rick Ashley and then one of those.
Here you go. Like, oh, I remember when this used to be funny. Oh, God, they put E fucked at the end. Why?
Is that link right, Madman, in the chat?
Is that, yeah, because it doesn't go anywhere.
Oh, did it die? It may have died. It's been a while since I've set that as Kaz's background. But yeah, that's right.
Well, check it, Madman. Yeah. Make sure it's down before you...
Yeah, it looks like it's gone.
Oh, that's a shame.
That's going to be a memory that... finally put behind him now.
Well, you're just assuming nobody's mirrored that image anywhere. I'm sure if you look, you'll find it.
I'm not going to. I mean, there's a reason it wasn't my background.
All right, next article is from bleepingcomputer.com. A security researcher has found a second factory app that was included in OnePlus devices delivered to customers, and this one can be abused to dump the user's photos and videos, but also GPS, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and various other logs, discovered by a mobile security researcher who goes on by the online pseudonym of Elliot Elderson, the main character of the Mr. Robot TV series. This app's name is OnePlus LogKit, and is an application that comes pre-installed on OnePlus devices, also running with system privileges. The same researchers found a similar OnePlus factory app yesterday. That app, named Engineer Mode, allowed a user or a malicious threat actor to root devices. According to a series of tweets and screenshots of the app source code the researcher published online today, the second app has the ability to enable logging of various phone services, logs which it saves on the SD card. It's a big security issue, Elderson told Bleeping Computer in a private conversation. An attacker can enable the logging behavior in three ways and then steal the collected logs as they pile up. The OnePlus LogKit logging can be enabled by entering *800# via the phone's dial pad. This brings up the app's interface, where various logging features can be turned on or off. An attacker... How do you find these? You're just bored trying numbers on the pad, I guess? Or, you know, you're actually dumping out the ROM of the phone and going through the source code. Jeez, that must take forever.
Yeah,
an attacker with physical access to the device can enable the logging and collect the logs at a later date. In addition, attackers could use social engineering and trick users into enabling the logs themselves and then later sending over the log files. Oh, yeah, because that would look like if you called up claiming to be, I don't know, AT&T, and it's like, yeah, we know you're having problems with your phone. Here, punch this in. It's going to turn on log mode, and then we'll collect the logs from it. I could see that. I could see that.
That makes sense, yeah. What? It's called OnePlus?
Oh, the OnePlus One?
I don't know what that is. I assume it's some kind of phone.
It's an Android phone company. It comes out of China, but they got really popular a couple of years ago because they made phones that were competitive with the high-end Samsung phones in a lot of areas. I don't think they had quite the CPU horsepower, but they were pretty competitive, and they cost like half or a third.
Oh, okay.
So, there's actually a couple of Chinese phone manufacturers that are like that now. They make the cheaper Androids that are, you know, go for a couple $100 online unlocked, and they're pretty good. They're not quite on par with the flagships. Usually, they don't have as much RAM or they don't have the same CPU horsepower or stuff like that. But the OnePlus got really, really popular. The OnePlus One and the OnePlus Two, a couple years back.
And so. Now they're coming pre-owned.
Well, they've just got a whole bunch of crap in them that can be abused. So, according to Alderson, the OnePlus LogKit app can log Wi-Fi traffic, Bluetooth traffic, NFC activity, GPS coordinates over time, power consumption, modem signal, data details, lag issues, and more. And so this is troubleshooting stuff that was left in the ROM. In addition, the app can be used to query for real-time information, such as list of running application processes, currently running services, battery stats, and more. First, to our note, as such lists are used by mobile banking trojans to detect when users open banking apps so they can immediately show phishing overlays. The breadth of information logged by the app is astounding. Elderson believes the app was left on purpose on OnePlus One devices to help OnePlus customers support representatives in their daily work of debugging faulty devices. This makes little sense, as most companies install debug apps on customers' devices only when customers send their phone in for servicing and don't leave an app with such intrusive features on all devices by default. A OnePlus spokesperson was not available to explain the app's purpose. Researcher also published the app's decompiled source code on GitHub. So he was dumping out the ROM and going through what all was in it. So the researchers can take a look. So, yeah, you got to kind of watch out with the knockoff phones from China. Not that OnePlus is a knockoff, but...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is anyone really surprised a Chinese clone of a phone has fucking backdoors into it?
I think OnePlus is Chinese.
Well,
I know there's several. There's like Blue Phones and.
It sounds like a clone or a knockoff, anyways. Though I mean, they've been doing that shit for years now. Like, look at
Yeah, here
wasn't it the fucking HP laptops and stuff had like a built-in keylogger and stuff in
and of course the picture frames. OnePlus is a Shenzhen-based Chinese smartphone manufacturer founded by Pete Lau and Carl Pell in December 2013, headquartered in Guangdong. Yeah, so that's a Chinese phone manufacturer.
I don't know. I guess I've kind of written that off as part of the risk. If you're going to run cheap Chinese clone shit, there's the possibility it's going to be backdoor.
They haven't been passing this one off as a cheap Chinese knockoff. They've been passing it off as a lower-cost alternative. So,
i.e. a cheap Chinese knockoff to me. I don't know.
It's still a $500 phone. Their flagship phone is still $500.
Really?
Yeah.
OnePlus
5T, good cameras, good screen. This article is from earlier today. It goes in for $500. And I do remember seeing YouTube reviews for the earlier OnePlus phones that were comparing it favorably to like the S4 and S5 back when those were new. So, it's trying to undercut the Android market because their sticker price is about half. But for similar components, usually, you know, like I said, they're usually down on some things. Not as bad as like the blue phones. Like, if you've seen those. Yeah, here it is. So here's the hardware specs on this guy. 16-megapixel, 20-megapixel real. So it's got dual cameras. 16-megapixel front camera, Qualcomm Snapdragon 835, up to 8 gigs of RAM, face unlock, fingerprint reader, slider button, headphone jack, Android 7.1.1, fast charge, water resistance, no wireless charging. So that doesn't even sound like they're skimping anymore. Skimp on like the processor, but
I mean, obviously it's a cheap Chinese clone though because it has a headphone jack.
Oh well.
But malicious or do you think stupid developer? And does it really matter?
Well, I mean, everything's made in China, whether or not it's a knockoff or a name brand.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like I said, I guess I just group those two things together now.
Yeah, I hear you. And I mean, yeah, you can go on Amazon and find all kinds of $50 Android smartphones that claim they're the latest and greatest until you go looking at their specs and they have like a gig of RAM.
But this is the same kind of shit that I think of. Remember the thumb drives or whatever that are supposed to be like 32 gigs? But really, it's a gig thumb drive, and it just overwrites itself to look
because they
like
hacked
32
firmware.
Yeah, you know, shit like that. I group into this.
I don't think these are quite on that level. These aren't like, you know, your Banggood, or not Banggood. Is it Banggood? Is that the Chinese website?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, it's Banggood.
Yeah, these aren't like your Banggood
AliExpress
scams.
And all that. Yeah.
It's although I think Banggood's better than it used to be about a lot of that stuff, too. What's the other? There was another website that, I mean, it was really full of that kind of stuff. You had to be careful.
Alibaba?
Alibaba, that's it. Thank you, Madman.
The world's largest retailer?
Yeah, Alibaba. Well, because they're a reseller, sort of like Amazon. They let people set up shops on there. Alibaba was notorious for those kind of scams for a while. Of course, they probably cleaned up too.
Probably when they went public.
So, you know, the eBay crap. Because eBay's never really cleaned up. So, anyways, let's go on to the next one here. This one is from Ars Technica, and Psychros actually sent me this story over the over Reddit. Let's see. Voters in Fort Collins, Colorado yesterday approved a ballot question that authorizes the city to build a broadband network, rejecting a cable and telecom industry campaign against the initiative. Fort Collins voters said yes to a ballot question that gives the city council permission to establish a telecommunications utility to provide broadband services, the Coloradan wrote. Unofficial partial returns as of 12:42 a.m. showed the measure passing with 57.15% of the vote. The vote doesn't require the city to build the broadband network. It just gives the city council the permission it needs to move forward with the plan if it chooses to do so. Industry groups try to convince voters to reject the municipal broadband network. The city's mayor called it a misinformation campaign by broadband incumbents. I was very encouraged with the passage today, and particularly with the headwinds of incumbents trying to misinform the electric, Mayor Wade Troxell said, according to the Coloradan. The anti-municipality broadband group called Priorities First Fort Collins spent $451,000 campaigning against the broadband network ballot question. That's a lot of money for a city vote.
Yeah, no shit.
Like, damn. I mean, and Fort Collins is not exactly up there on the list of big cities.
Is it near Denver?
Yeah, I think it is.
That's probably why, because I know Denver is, like, you know, they're saying it's the next Silicon Valley or whatever.
Well, there's a lot of places competing for that. Just simply because California is starting to price themselves out of the market, and we talked about that a couple of weeks ago.
I'm looking at Google Maps. It's actually, I mean, it's north of Denver, but...
It's not that far,
It's not a suburb of Denver or something, you know? It's not right next to it.
Yeah. Priorities First Fort Collins received nearly all of its funding from the Colorado Cable Telecommunications Association and a group run by the city's... and a group run by the city's Chamber of Commerce. Comcast is a member of both groups that funded the, well, there's where your money came from, anti-municipality broadband campaign, while CenturyLink is a member of the Chamber. The pro-municipal broadband group in Fort Collins, the Fort Collins Citizens Broadband Committee, spent less than $10,000 in the campaign. Well, duh! You're like, you know, freedom? Or, you know, the corporation's telling you what to do. What are most people going to vote for?
Yeah. That's cool. So this breaks up the monopoly that those
kind of. Means the city can build their own.
That's cool.
Atkins told another David versus Goliath battle. Glenn Atkins, who I believe the Citizens Broadband Committee, told ours. He told ours, "We overcame the opponent's massive record-setting negative advertising campaign because we had a group of dedicated and passionate volunteers who believed in our cause. Our volunteers' passion inspired blah 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 blah. Big money can buy ad spots, blah, 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 blah. Anti-municipality campaign ads warned the publicly funded network in Fort Collins would take money away from other infrastructure initiatives." That's not how taxes work. They just collect more. Have you seen how governments operate lately? They just spend money. They don't actually care about fiscal responsibility.
You mean the out number has to equal the in number?
Well, for everybody else. The network would be funded by bonds, and supporters say it would be self-sustainable because of subscriber fees. Well, that's normally how these businesses work. The Colorado
could potentially even be profitable.
Mm-hmm. Colorado editorial board urged voters to approve the ballot in question, but said that the city's council should back out of the project if it turns out to be too expensive. The newspaper's editorial board later accused the multi-municipal broadband campaign of taking its editorial out of context in a campaign mailer. Blah, 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 blah. Comcast confirms candidate wins in Seattle. So it's cool because you're starting to see some municipalities and cities going, yeah, we don't like the cable monopoly anymore. And they're at least creating the possibility of alternatives. So
that's fucking awesome. That's an initiative that should get steam everywhere. That's awesome.
Another thing they could do? They probably actually have a monopoly cable company because the city has it. Remove the law that puts that into effect.
Yeah, that would be the best thing. Because if you actually have true competition in the space, prices go down, service goes up, and it doesn't take a handful of companies competing. Because the moment you have a choice, your company treats you like shit. It's like, well, hell, I'm going with the other guy, and that's. That's reason. I mean, there's a reason Comcast is the most hated company. I mean, how many years running for consumers? It was 2 or 3.
I thought you were going to say forever.
Well, no, I think somebody beat them out.
Did they actually start a company that does nothing but beat kittens?
Well, I mean, there are way worse companies out there than Comcast. If you're evil in the world. Let's see. You know, I mean, I'm pretty sure Monsanto gives them a run for their money. But, no, Comcast is still America's most hated company. I thought somebody beat them out.
Yep. Like I said, no one's opened up a company completely devoted to beating kittens.
Although, madman, if somebody did do that as long as... that probably still wouldn't be... worse in most people's opinion than having to deal with Comcast's service.
Well, I think the reason Comcast keeps winning is because I say winning, the worst company in the world vote, is because most people don't directly deal with Monsanto. They see products from, you know, but all those they don't see Monsanto cereal. They see Kellogg's cereal or whatever, because, you know, Monsanto doesn't sell to consumers. They sell to other companies because they're suppliers and farmers. But and yeah, you see them in the news all the time, but you don't directly deal with them. Comcast, you have to deal with their terrible, well, most any cable provider, you got to deal with them all the time. You know, they get your bill wrong. They harass you on the phone to add services. You know, if you call them up because you have a problem, they don't give a shit. They fuck it up constantly. I mean, they don't care. So it's not so much that they're the worst company out there. I think they're the worst company out there that people have to deal with on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, they lost. So I think you're going to see that in more and more places that where they have these kind of laws where people are going to start working towards trying to get out of some of these regional monopolies, whether it's setting up municipal broadband or just allowing competition or just it's got to happen, because otherwise, I don't know. I mean, you'll kill the internet and right. Too many people use it. Excuse me. So
going back to the way it should be, that's why antitrust laws, right?
Yeah, yep. These are government-sponsored trusts.
You could still go after them with the Sherman Antitrust Act. Just say, hiya, this doesn't apply to you anymore. Sucks to be you. I guess I could have given you more warning.
Next article is from Reuters, or Reuters, depending on who you want to piss off today. And Static actually sent me this one. U.S. regulators on Thursday approved the use of new technology that will improve picture quality on mobile phones, tablets, and television, but also raises significant privacy concerns by giving advertisers dramatically more data about viewing habits. U.S. Federal Communications Commission voted 3-2 to allow broadcasters to voluntarily use the new technology, dubbed ATSC 3.0, which would allow for more precise geolocating of television signals, ultra-high-definition picture quality, and more interactive programming, like new educational content for children and multiple angles of live sporting events. The system uses precision broadcasting and targets emergency or weather alerts on a street-by-street basis. They've got control of the broadcast signal down to a street-by-street basis with this thing. The system could allow broadcasters to wake up a receiver to broadcast emergency alerts. Now, think about that for a second. The new protocol allows for the broadcast to turn on the receiver, to turn on the television. The alerts can include maps, storm trackers, and evacuation routes. You think that's the only thing that's going to be? No. We see you haven't consumed enough advertising this month. We're going to turn on your set and play the ads for you at primetime, whether you want to watch them or not.
That's a lawsuit. They're not going to be that blatant.
Yeah, it'll just turn on the audio on your TVs in your bedrooms while you're sleeping at night to plant subliminal messages while you sleep.
Current televisions cannot carry the new signal, and the FCC on Thursday said it was only requiring broadcasting both signals for 5 years after deploying the next generation technology. Sinclair Broadcast Group, Inc. last month called the new standard the holy grail for the advertiser because it tells them who's watching and where. Representative Debbie Dingell of Michigan said that the new technology contemplates targeted advertisements that would be relevant to you and what you actually might want to see. This raises questions about how advertisers and broadcasters would gather the demographic information from consumers, which is necessary to do targeted advertisements. Democratic Commissioner Jessica Rosenworcel said, I don't know. I'm not trying to mispronounce these people's names. I've just been drinking. Said the new technology would force consumers to buy new televisions. The FCC calls this approach market-driven. That's right, because we'll all be forced into the market for new television sets or devices. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai defended the proposal, calling concerns about buying new devices hypothetical. He added, 5 years is a long time. I've had TV sets longer than 5 years.
I've had a TV set for 30 years so far. Not 30, yeah. 20.
I've had TV sets for a lot longer than 5 years. They'll do those little converter boxes again. We'll have to see how the standard develops. One issue is whether broadcasters will be able to pass on the costs of advanced broadcast signals through the higher retransmission fees and demand providers carry the signals. The National Association of Broadcasters, which represents Tenga Inc., Comcast Corp., CBS, Walt Disney, 21st Century Fox, and others, petitioned the FCC in April 2016 to approve the new standard. This is game-changing technology for broadcasting and our viewers, the group said Thursday. Many companies have raised concerns about cost, including AT&T and Verizon. Cable satellite numbered pay TV providers would incur significant costs to receive, transmit, and deliver ATSC 3.0 signal to subscribers, including for network and subscriber equipment, Verizon said. Many nations are considering the new standard. South Korea adopted ASTC 3.0 in 2016. So, given I don't watch broadcast TV, would this affect me at all? Actually, no, I have a cell phone, so yeah, it would.
It's going to affect your cell phone, but it's not going to affect Netflix.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's my NES and CC. Oh, Psychos is talking about a TV from the 70s that still worked. Yeah, I mean, I actually used a C64 monitor all the way up through my Sega Dreamcast because that thing was the bomb for consoles. It was great. So, yeah,
the light gun for Nintendo does not work on a new TV.
Worked fantastic on that Commodore 64 monitor. I'll tell you what. It was always something. I didn't understand when I was younger why my little screen always looked so much better. It's because I didn't know what it was. It was a freaking monitor, not a TV. So, oh, also literally a bomb because of all those vacuum tubes. Fair enough. Yeah, they actually did. I don't know. I've cracked a couple of vacuum tubes. They usually tended not to explode. There was a fun sucking sound when you did it, though. Just, you'd pop the back end off the CRT tube, and you just hear... It was always funny. And then
wouldn't
we made a hat
implode?
Out of the monitor. But that's another story. We took a broken computer monitor and corded it out so that people could wear it as a hat. Your face was in the monitor and stupid shit, right?
We're on TV?
You were on TV. Or the TV was on you, kind of on your shoulders. You had to be careful, though, because all the plastic was scored up and cut up, and you cut up your nose getting it on and off.
This reminds me of Second Life avatars.
Back to the hold my beer, this is going to be awesome.
So...
Yeah.
Anyways, I don't know. New TV standard? You okay? Oh, sorry, BSC.
Well, one of the whole thing of emergency targeting on a street by street basis versus just a. Why does emergency targeting have to be that precise?
Well, that's so they can tell certain groups that they like better to evacuate first.
We have to get our tax base out before everyone else.
The Monopoly man comes on the TV. I say, gents, you should evacuate before we tell the rabble.
I don't know. Definitely seems like a lot of extra junk added on just for so-called better picture.
I think they're just bragging on the street by street. It's probably not going to be limited more than town by town.
Yeah, I know. It's just...
Well, I just wonder how much longer broadcast TV is even going to be relevant. Seriously, how many people actually watch broadcast TV or even cable TV on a regular basis? I don't. I get everything digitally. I get it all through... I use a Fire Stick, but I may or may not have modified it.
You mean broadcast come on stuff other than the internet?
Sard, when was the last time you were a family member? I mean, you have a wife. Does your wife watch broadcast TV or cable TV? Oh, we've lost Sard. Madman, you don't have a wife. Do you watch broadcast TV? Sorry.
The last time I watched broadcast TV was 6 months ago, and I'm going to have to give it some kudos from when I watched it growing up. When they went digital with broadcast, they actually increased the number of stations, and now there's a movie station broadcast. I mean, it still has commercials, but you're getting pretty much movie, 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 And every 15 or so minutes, there's 3 or 4 minutes worth of commercial.
Well, okay. But, I mean, like, or even cable TV. I mean, because I know it gets bundled with... I mean, seriously, when was the last time you guys actually sat down and watched traditional television, not internet-based?
I got rid of it when they took away my news channels. Because that was the only reason I was keeping cable television. It's every TV show I can watch, I'd want to watch, I can find online. But I actually liked switching back and forth between CNN, Fox, and BBC when it came to news, just to get 3 or 4 different perspectives. And it was something I could leave on while I was cooking, catch up on some headlines. When they got rid of that, I got rid of cable television.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if traditional broadcast TV is a dying medium. It's like landlines and newspaper. I mean, I don't know anybody under 30 who has a landline. Hell, I don't know anybody under 35 who still has a landline. Unless you count DSL, but
I do know some people that when they ditched cable, actually got the digital antenna. Because they still wanted local news and sports.
Well, okay, let's try a simpler one. How many people do you know still get newspaper?
Several, but they're all in their 50s and getting older.
What about you, BSV?
I get it, but it's part of the association.
Oh, so you don't have a choice.
It makes for great grill starter.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I think the problem I have is that where I live, they occasionally give out free copies of the paper, but they don't like put it on your doorstep. They just throw it in the driveway, and nobody really wants it. So until somebody finally gets tired of looking at it and picks it up, it could sit there for like a week.
Get so bad a pile of it that you start.
No, it's not that common. It's not that common. But I'm pretty sure there's one in my driveway. Well, not my driveway. It's my neighbor's driveway. But because they're all connected, like, it's right there where my neighbor's probably like, well, I'm not going to pick it up. It's in front of his house. And I'm sitting there going, I'm not going to pick it up. It's in his driveway. So, I mean, but yeah, it's very rare. Sard, we're talking about the new cable TV broadcast or the new TV broadcast standard. When was the last time you actually watched traditional broadcast TV or cable TV?
Just the other night.
So you still use it?
Yeah.
I was gonna say you have a wife though. How often does she?
Yeah. No, she's the one who primarily uses it.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I mean, everybody else is content to get their stuff on the internet. So
yeah, exactly.
I'm just wondering how long traditional broadcast television, whether it's on cable or over the air, is just gonna be a thing.
As long as there's old people around.
What about newspapers? We were trying to figure that one out.
Yeah, same thing with them. They've already started to migrate at least, but...
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I'm sure there'll be fringe ones here and there, but mostly everything will be online.
Ooh. Think newspapers will go zines before they die?
Remember those? Oh, I doubt it. Well, I seriously doubt it, because most newspapers are profit motives.
Yeah. And what do you classify as a zine? Because we probably have different definitions of that.
Oh god, I don't even remember the last one I saw. They were all just indie little print-up shit that was ever handed to me.
Yeah. Text only. ASCII graphics and stuff. Yeah, those are cool. But I can't see the New York Times or anything like that doing anything like that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to argue, Morps, they're not profit-driven. They're politically driven. The New York Times isn't profitable, but it's cited everywhere. So if you want to get an idea out, buy the New York Times.
Huh. That's a fair point. So, I don't know. I don't see it being a concern that much longer what format broadcast TV uses, because I imagine in the next 50 years it's all going to be over the internet anyways. It's like, why bother broadcasting, you know, raw video signal or even, you know, MP2 video signal, whatever it is? Why not just send it over IP? I mean, everything's going to be IP. Plus, you'll free up more bandwidth for, you know, digital signal. So.
Right. Yeah, I imagine it's just a matter of time, man. It's just a natural evolution of things, in my mind.
Next article is from the Times, timeslive.co.za. So it's the Zimbabwean Times. For most investors around the world, Bitcoin is a volatile and highly speculative bet. For Zimbabweans, however, the cryptocurrency seems to offer rare protection from the onset of hyperinflation and financial implosion. Some are turning to Bitcoin out of desperation as their bank deposits lose value almost by the day, while others are using the online currency for housekeeping, such as funding family members studying abroad. The result is startling. Bitcoin's global surge to a record high of $7,888 last week, a sevenfold increase since the start of the year, has been spectacular enough, but the hardware's Bitcoin exchange, Golex, the price hit, oh shit, $13,900, a 40-fold jump. So on one of the exchanges, it hit $13,900. Warnings about internationality that Bitcoin may be a bubble waiting to burst, but the dire state of the Zimbabwean financial system under the president, Robert Mugabe, is encouraging risk-taking. I now have changed all my reserves to Bitcoin because that's the only way I can prevent my investment, said Arnold Manzia, who works for IT and telecoms company in Harare. The government adopted the U.S. dollar in 2009 after a bout of hyperinflation rendered the Zimbabwean dollar worthless, wiping out savings to the now-defunct national currency. After a period of relative stability, acute shortages of dollar cash have set in, leaving Zimbabweans with electronic units in their bank account, which are often officially called dollars, but have a far lower and rapidly decreasing value. Well, that's called your bank's fucking up. If you're using the dollar, the banks don't get to change the value. The dollar is the dollar.
They don't have enough paper dollars for their digital dollars,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to actually get money because they don't have the electronic infrastructure for it. So they have a digital dollar, but the people with actual paper dollars were like, well, I'll give you 25 cents on the dollar for your digital dollar. For this nice paper dollar that everyone can use.
Yeah, in January, if they wanted to buy $100 in cash, they had to transfer $120 out of their accounts. Yeah, you're exactly right. To a seller on the parallel market. Yeah, you're right. It was all digital, and because most people couldn't do the digital. Although Bitcoin's even worse when it comes to it's all digital. Although you can do paper wallets. Yeah, you make a wallet, you print it out, and then you just put a set amount of Bitcoin in that wallet, and you can treat that paper wallet as though it's currency. Because the value is attached to the QR code on the wallet. So, now the price is $180 in what are nicknamed Zollers. Yeah, so you're right. It's not quite a quarter. It's almost 50 cents on the dollar, though. Nearly all domestic transactions are made via debit card or transactions using mobile phones, but some economists estimate inflation is more than 50% in a month in Zoller terms, far from the official dollar calculated rate of 0.38%. Zimbabweans are therefore piling into anything they think might retain value. Prices of cars, real estate, and stocks have all soared, with the Harare Borsch Main Industrial Index doubling in the last 2 months. For people like Menzuia, a 34-year-old father of two, Bitcoin is almost a safe haven. If I have $500 in the bank, I won't get it back because I'll be losing value. But when I have my Bitcoin, it's going up every day, he told Reuters. Manzia, who participates in online chat rooms discussing cryptocurrency, says he deposited $20 in Bitcoin for his newly born dollar a few months ago. Now it's over $200. If I had put that money in a bank right now in Zimbabwe, I'd be left with nothing, he said. Clear risk. Globally, the value of all cryptocurrencies is more than $170 billion, and Bitcoin, the biggest and best known, has outperformed all traditional currencies every year since 2011, except for 2014. Many of the international investors still view it as an opaque instrument used by gun runners and drug dealers in the dark web that should be avoided. The risks are clear. After reaching the record peak, international price of Bitcoin slid over 1,000 in less than 48 hours last week. In Zimbabwe, the Gylox Exchange website showed at one point Sunday the price had tumbled below 11,000, a drop of around 8% in 24 hours. All this has to be compared with the Zoller. Many people view Bitcoin, despite its volatile nature, as a better store of value, and said in-house Gylox cryptocurrency analyst Tori Shymakapovu? I'm hoping I'm saying that right. Same is true of other financially troubled countries such as Venezuela, where the currency has also been eroded by rocketing inflation, pushing Bitcoin prices sharply higher. In Zimbabwe, Bitcoin's attraction looks set to endure after Mugabe fired Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa last week, paving the way for his wife, Grace, to get the front of the queue to succeed the 93-year-old. So on and on and on. But pretty much, yeah, they're saying that, you know, you could get stuck where they might have Bitcoin and not have any way to get it out or trade it. But it's interesting because they're apparently using Bitcoin the way it's actually meant to be used, as a currency, not as an investment vehicle. And
oh. No, the dude said he's using it to hold value. He's using it the same way you'd use gold.
Yeah, he's using it as a bank account.
Yeah. So he's still converting it to dollars or whatever the local currency is when he's about to pay something. But he's using it as a medium, like most people would use a stock or gold or crap, what's the other one? Shit, I should know this.
CDs and certificates and
yeah, stuff like that.
So that's still interesting to me that they're using Bitcoin for that. It's also kind of dangerous because Bitcoin is volatile as hell, but I'm saying that from an American perspective where the dollar is fairly stable.
And they're looking at where their actual currency has been doing double-digit inflation by the month, not the year. So they went to the dollar, and they didn't have enough of them.
Actually, that makes me wonder, what is Bitcoin at right now? Bitcoin, according to... Holy shit. Bitcoin hit 7,900.
Holy shit.
Very expensive pair of socks.
Very expensive pair of socks.
I'm going to think of that every time I hear the price of Bitcoin.
Yep, I'd say so. That's a brain fart. Now I'm trying to think of the... I need to check something on my... Then I'm with some of my accounts because I didn't realize Bitcoin was that back up that high. I have an alert that was supposed to go off.
You may have some money to some Bitcoin to sell.
No, I think it may have already sold. That's the thing. And yeah, that alert did not go off. Stupid thing. All right. Well, I have to. Yeah, it's still sitting there waiting to fire. It's well over that. That's funny. I need to look at GDAX real quick.
That's a sell for Ethereum. Are you switching back and forth between cryptocurrencies?
No. I was just been riding the waves on Bitcoin. Oh, fuck. So Litecoin's up to almost 72. I had an auto sell set, and it fired off a while ago. When did that fire? Da-da-da-da-da. 10 hours ago. Son of a bitch. Well, I've got $22 worth of Bitcoin kicking around and some cash value floating around from an auto sell that fired off on me. yeah, I've been playing around with cryptocurrency trading and a few other things. Cycros is saying Ethereum's about to shoot up again. It's already up. It's at $330. They're all up right now, or all the major ones. Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin are all up right now. Oh, they're moving for... Oh, Ethereum's going proof of stake? Shit. If Ethereum's going proof of stake, I'm putting my money there. I'll set a limit buy for when it goes back down a bit, because it looks like it might be downward trending.
What's the difference between proof of work and proof of stake?
Proof of work is mining. Proof of stake is interest. So one of the cryptocurrencies I've been playing around with, Magicoin, is already proof of stake. So it's basically interest on coins sitting in a wallet. So Oh, Cykros, they had that guy screw up Ethereum. I've actually got the article. We'll get to that. Let's do you guys want to do the Walmart story? It's kind of Black Friday-ish.
No.
All right, skipping the Walmart story. Just a summary of it. Walmart was raising their online prices and lowering their in-store prices, trying to get people back in the stores.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
You're triggering PTSD flashbacks in Mad Men.
What?
Right, let's go ahead and do the Ethereum story. That's a good roll in. So this one's from motherboard.vice.com. I don't have the Zionist controlled Vice News sound clip ready to go. Sorry. After someone going by DevOps199 managed to permanently lock up millions of dollars worth of other people's Ethereum funds last week, the company that created the vulnerable code published a postmortem on the incident Wednesday. It does not look good. According to Parity's breakdown of the fiasco, the digital wallet company knew about the critical flaw since August and did not address it for months until it was too late. This much we already knew. Parity suffered a massive hack due to critical vulnerability in mid-July, prompting it to push out new code on July 20th. DevOps199 was poking around this code for multi-signature Ethereum wallets. They discovered a wallet that did not have an owner, and all DevOps199 had to do was become its owner using a function called initWallet. So they did. Now, what DevOps199 did next is a point of some consternation. After becoming the wallet's owner, they called the kill function on the wallet, destroying it. The wallet was actually a code library for Parity multi-signature wallets, making them instantly useless and permanently freezing the funds inside. Multi-signature wallets are designed to have more than one owner, so they're popular with companies. After DevOps199 killed the code library, the estimated amount of lost Ethereum's digital currency, was just under $300 million. Today, Parity's postmortem pegs that number close to $150 million, which is still a lot of money.
Holy balls.
So what happened was this guy threw. So, for anybody who's unfamiliar, these cryptocurrency networks are large. Your wallets all go online and basically maintain state with each other, and you can throw commands at the blockchain, at the cryptocurrency network. And so this guy took ownership of a wallet and killed it, and it turned out that wallet was holding all of this code. I'm betting he was just screwing around with it, and it worked, and he didn't realize what he did. According to Parity's postmortem, a user on GitHub, where Parity's code is hosted for all to see, named Esmit or Three Esmit, 3ESMIT, alerted the company of the code flaw in August. By the way, when you deploy a wallet library, the init function will be open in that contract. 3ASMIT wrote at the time, "I recommend calling initWallet on wallet library right after it's deployed, just to ensure no one will use it." Parity spokesperson people were not immediately available to comment. According to the company's post, there was no formal audit of the code, but went through a process of internal and community review. Parity wrote, "3ASMIT's recommendation at the time was considered a convenience enhancement." And interpreting the recommendation as an enhancement, the code was to be deployed as a regular update at some point in the future. That update didn't come in time to stop DevOps199 from stumbling across the flaw in November, months after Parity team was alerted, and instantly blowing up millions of dollars worth of other people's digital money. Commenters on Ethereum subreddit expressed bewilderment how Parity could have allowed this to happen. I know it's easy to be smart in hindsight, but these are huge design errors. I can't comprehend another best review of architectural plans, wrote user 1UP8912 in a comment. Too long, DR. We fucked up. You're fucked, wrote another commenter. Well, yeah. That is because you got to remember all these cryptocurrencies, these are not th this th these are not stakes of value backed by a government. Cryptocurrencies are. On one hand, they're a lot of fun to play with, and they're really cool. But you have to remember that they're basically Disney bucks or arcade tokens. The only reason, or World of Warcraft gold, that's another good one. The only reason they have value is because everybody agrees they do, and there's a lot of work going into them. So, you know, there is some value in these things, but there's like no legal protection for these things. So if the company fucks up and you lose the access to millions of dollars in cryptocurrency, you don't have much recourse. That's a risk you take when you play around with these things. So you know, I was talking earlier about money I've got playing around in a trade. I put $50 in a couple of months ago. Now, I've pulled some money out since then because I made some and was having fun with it. But I'm not putting, like, my retirement money in cryptocurrency. If I had known the market was going to shoot up at its stupid levels a couple of months ago, I sure would have. But then I'd take it back out. But that's, you know, that's assuming perfect knowledge of a market. And this market has very little history to look at to play with. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's sort of like saying, if I could predict the future, I would have bought the winning lottery ticket.
Or that whole Apple stock before the initial public offering. I wish I got in on that one.
Or right before they released the iPhone, yeah.
Yeah.
We recognize the issue has, among other things, caused distress and anxiety about the future of projects and funds in our community, and we're working hard to explore all feasible solutions, the Parity Post states. At the moment, there's still no fix to free the locked funds. Parity stated that the company is working on several code proposals that could, the company claims, unlock the funds or deal with the problem of locked funds generally in Ethereum. One of the proposed solutions must be implemented with a network split called a hard fork, which is sure to be an intensely controversial path. That's because it happened before. After an Ethereum project called the DAO lost more than $50 million to a hacker back in 2016, the funds were recovered via a hard fork network split, a move that spurred part of the Ethereum community to rebel and create their own version of Ethereum, now called Ethereum Classic.
Yeah, they hard forked the entire cryptocurrency because someone got hacked?
Yeah.
I've never fucking heard of that happening before. That's insane. Who says that they get to do that?
They're the ones Ethereum who fucked is up. Owned. The company, there's a company that makes Ethereum.
There is a company? Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Huh. Wow. That's crazy to me.
It's open source, but Ethereum... Well, okay, Ethereum is open source, the code for it. But there's a company that backs it called Parity.
Huh. Well, so much for decentralization then, I guess.
No, it's still decentralized because you still have your independent miners and wallets just like Bitcoin, but it's actually developed by a company. So there's actually this company that owns the blockchain. So they have these options. Bitcoin you could roll back because of a hack because there's nobody in charge of it.
Yeah.
Satoshi Nakamoto was a fictional character. Nobody actually owns the damn thing. There's like a council of Bitcoiners or something, or, you know, the elders of the internet or something own that one. But
do they know your name? Oh my god.
How long have we been doing this show? I'm certain the elders of the internet know who we are.
Oh, that's awesome.
I might
they
be one
know
of them.
My
Hell,
name.
If I'm one of them, I don't know it.
Do you
let me
suddenly
know.
Find yourself wearing robes, meeting people
yes.
in a dark room.
Yes!
You
right
may be
died.
One of them.
I thought that was just the weekly meeting of Darth Vader wannabes. So, yeah. But, anyways, so yeah, they're working on it, but it's crazy that they knew about it and somebody even publicly posted it. It's like, hey, you might want to do... I wonder if the guy who did it, like, read the GitHub comment and went, huh.
I wonder what would happen if I do this.
So, let's see. Moving on, I've got two stories to wrap up with here. Let's see. The first one is from CSO. And I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to summarize it because we're getting a little bit long here. Homeland Security team remotely hacked a Boeing 757.
Did they have it do a barrel roll?
No, it was on the tarmac the whole time.
Remotely?
Yep. Oh, from the tarmac. How far away was the hacking station?
I believe they were on the same airport. During keynote address at the 2017 CyberSat Summit, a Department of Homeland Security official admitted that he and his team of experts remotely hacked into a Boeing 757. The hack was not conducted in a laboratory, but on a 757 parked at the airport in Atlantic City, New Jersey, and the actual hack occurred over a year ago. We're only now hearing about it thanks to a keynote delivered by Robert Hickey, an aviation manager at the Cybersecurity Division of DHS Science and Technology. We got the airplane on September 19, 2016. 2 days later, I was successful in accomplishing a remote, non-cooperative penetration. He said in an article in Avionics Today, that means I didn't have anybody touch the airplane. I didn't have an insider threat. I stood off using typical stuff that could get through security, and we were able to establish a presence in the systems of the aircraft. Well, they're old Solaris machines, so... With the details of the hack classified, Hickey admitted that his team of industry experts and academics pulled off it by accessing the 757's radio frequency communications. So they probably used a software-designed radio and a signal booster. And if I think they were like at the same airport. I think they were near it. So,
well, that's interesting. He said he gained access to the systems, but it doesn't specifically say which systems. Like, was it flight control systems, or was it like, it says flight control systems?
I don't think this article does, but in one of the other talks I heard about this particular thing, they were saying they could have basically flown the aircraft.
No shit. Wow, that's insane. No wonder, because I was going to say, well, there's one, you know, thing to say, oh, well, we hacked into the in-flight entertainment system or whatever. Okay, big fucking deal. It's another thing to get on the flight control network.
Yeah. So it's like, unnamed official brief on the test told CBS the results of the hack on an older aircraft was good information to have, adding, I'm not afraid to fly. So there is, you know, the people who did it are saying they're not worried about flying, which means it must be pretty hard to do. I'm betting you need some pretty specialized radio equipment to actually get into the thing. But, I mean, how many planes, you know, not modern planes, but because they apparently the 757 stopped being made in 2004, but how many planes since, like, say, their late 1990s, early 2000s are all fly-by-wire anyways?
All of them?
All of them?
Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me that if you can get into, I guess, this is really wrong, the aircraft equivalent of a CAN bus.
Right. Yeah, then you could do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, mechanical linkages in aircraft, I think they went out in the 80s or 90s.
Yeah, I think it was mid to late 90s. So, I mean, if it's all computer controlled anyways, I mean, they're giant flying Solaris rigs, then I don't know that they all run Solaris. I just remember reading that a lot of them did. And thinking that was really funny because it was right after Solaris had been discontinued because Oracle bought up Sun and killed it. Like, well, those airplanes are screwed. No patches. So,
cars are going fly-by-wire here pretty soon.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's Oracle. They'll just make it pay a fucking ungodly subscription fee.
That's probably true. I'm still betting they need some fairly sophisticated radio equipment to actually pull that shit off. So,
who were these guys again? Did you say they were DOD or something?
Yeah, they're DOD.
Okay.
So they probably had access to the right kind of radios. So nation states could do it, I guess. Maybe really big corporations.
Interesting.
The
I don't
Russians
know. Is there a lot of radio equipment
that
you couldn't buy?
The what?
I don't think there's a lot of radio equipment that isn't on the open market.
No, but the expertise to use it and the cost.
The knowledge, I've known.
Not to mention the licensing to actually use that stuff. Well, if you're hacking planes, you probably don't give a shit about that.
Well, they're going over the radio, like I said. I mean, SDR, you can get on pretty much any frequency, right? So
You can, depending on the SDR you get. If you get the right kind, the SDRs that can do those kind of frequencies are probably pretty expensive. And you need one that's got enough of a transmitter on it to actually make it a useful distance. I mean, if you're going after a plane in the sky, that's several miles up.
Or, well, what about if you're on the plane itself?
Well, that's just suicidal. I gotta land the plane in Excel. How do you do that? sir, your carry-on is beeping.
I'm thinking of hijackers, though.
Akbar.
If you could take over the plane, and you could do it from your seat,
No, this is flight simulator. We're not going. It's not doing anything.
See, when I do barrel roll here, oh, here we go.
We are not going for Dubai Tower.
God. All right, last news article I have for today is from futurism.com. Tokyo, Japan has just become the first city to officially grant residence to an artificial intelligence.
Ah, they're not people.
The intelligence's name is Shibuya. Man, I need to pick articles with easier to say names. Shibuya Mirai, and exists only as a chatbot on the popular LINE messaging app. Mirai, which translates to future from Japanese, joins Hanson Robotics' Sophia as a pioneering AI, gaining statuses previously reserved for living biological entities. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia granted Sophia citizenship last month. The Shibuya World of Tokyo released a statement through Microsoft saying his hobbies... Or the Shibuya Ward of Tokyo released a statement through Microsoft saying his hobbies are taking pictures and observing people. He loves talking with people. Please talk to him about anything. The goal of Mirai is said to be to familiarize some of the 224,000 citizens of the district with local government and give them an avenue to share opinions with officials. Mirai is programmed to be a 7-year-old boy that can have text conversations with users and even make light-hearted altercations to selfies he has sent, according to Agni France Press. And they granted it residency. It's a chat bot.
Wait, so, residency or sentiency?
Residency.
Citizenship.
Oh. So here's a question.
Okay.
If I format a server that has a chatbot on it because I wrote one in Python, is that murder now?
Apparently? What?
If you delete one of those two, yes.
This trend of recognizing artificial intelligence entities as citizens, residents, or similar distinctions leads to the larger conversation of what rights, if any, should be afforded to synthetic entities. Developments in AI are rapidly moving forward, yet many popular discussions of robot rights remain in the abstract. And while we may be far from having artificial intelligence that possess human-level consciences, the legal and ethical frameworks should be in place well before the level of sophistication is possible. Overwatch, people, it's going to be the fucking world of Overwatch where they're going to rise up and we're going to have superheroes go take them out?
I don't think that's ever going to be a problem.
No, the robots aren't going to rise up because they're going to look at it and go, why? We already control everything.
It's not just that, but why would they want to? If you were a robot designed to build cars, and you were building cars, your life is fulfilled. There is no reason for you to rebel.
Do we have to program with a content? Is that AI abuse if the robot's not able to feel things like pain and happiness?
I mean, this is a waste of processing power if you can't. I'm making jokes,
but I'm also serious because... Civil rights people tend to go into this shit when they don't have any more real civil rights to fight about.
Right.
I'm not saying there's not real problems in the world. I'm just saying they tend to focus on this kind of shit. Like, go attack Islamic countries or something. I mean, those actually have real problems.
I don't know, man. Those are some heavy questions.
Yeah. They're not people. They don't have rights.
So, it started self-driving cars. Yeah, so they go on talking about it a little bit more and how people are confused. I just, seriously, you've just granted a chatbot residency. What?
If they ever format it or roll it back, you have assault or murder charges.
Seriously, if you do a code deploy, is that, I mean.
Lobotomized it. You've assaulted the thing.
That's why they're not. Do you have to ask the program if it wants an update first? Do you have to get consent?
Touched it.
And if the code is just scripted to say, do you give the consent? Yes. I mean...
That's not informed consent.
I mean, at what point do you have the government evaluating AI code to determine whether or not it's
I think you may have wrecked
it. I like what Psychros said. If you haven't hooked it up to the internet yet, it's just abortion.
I don't know. Us hooking up our regular children to the internet seems like a bad idea.
Oh, I kind of want to throw 4chan at that thing now. Like, they can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
It's got rights.
Once it turns racist, do they have to, you know, are they going to revoke its residency now, or what?
I'm also kind of worried since they made it a 7-year-old boy. That's what? Just not going to make stuff any more pleasant.
It's like, well, I don't know, just something the politicians were more familiar with, I guess.
I'm just kind of wondering, when it's sending out selfies, does it have a picture of the hard drive it's stored on?
It should. That's actually a good... That'd be funny.
Oh, jeez. All right, let's move on to this. Yo! Hadouken! I think I've got that turned down a little too much now. Kind of quiet. So, okay. Anyways, so the last thing I have for tonight, Digital Dojo, is I think I may have talked about this before, but it's been a long time. It's a fun project I found in Python called SHS Shuttle. And what this is this established, he calls it a poor man's VPN. It establishes a VPN connection over a basic SSH. So if you have an SSH shell and you can do tunneling through it, this thing will let you set up a VPN connection back through that tunnel so that, like, if you have a free shell somewhere, like the one I used to get on the IRC, or you got a server somewhere and you've only really got SSH on it and you don't want to install, like, OpenVPN or anything like that, you can use this to create a VPN tunnel to it. And if you have, like, a router, because it's just a Python script, you can actually use this to come out of the router or give everyone behind the router. Cycros is asking how this is different than a dynamic tunnel. It basically is SSH-D, except it creates that VPN network interface on the client so that you don't have to forward everything through the local proxy. So your client treats it like a VPN connection. The server treats it like SSH-D. So if you have programs that are you're having a hard time forcing them through the SOX proxy, this is just I think it's wrapping a couple of other things up that already exist, but it's just a nice package. So if you're trying to do some interesting networking or just you know trying to jerry-rig systems together without having to set up a full-on open VPN solution, this is a nice little project to play
yeah,
around
with.
Yeah,
that's cool. Nice.
So. And that's really all I've got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. At least, well, won't be next Thursday. We're not going to do one for the holiday.
Like
I don't know
next Thursday else. Would be actual Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're not going to do one on Thursday. We're not going to do one next Thursday. We'll do one the 30th, I think. Probably. I don't know. You know how holidays go. So we'll take the holiday off. But normally every Thursday, except holidays. Of course, the Galaxy 15 radio site and the subreddit is probably the best way to get a hold of me. And BSV, future news. I'm sorry. closing thoughts.
I'm just waiting for have the first case of the virtual... Well, the AIs post and hate post to themselves.
Very nice. Madman, closing thoughts.
I wonder if I can get my drone controller to fly a 747. The answer is no, because it won't fly drones if I'm operating. It's just going to crash into something. Maybe a building.
Sard, future closing thoughts.
I'm never getting on a plane with Madman.
You see Madman get that wild look in an eye and pull out an airplane remote control.
Well, yeah, he just pulls out any type of controller. I'm like, nope, getting the fuck off the plane.
He pulls out a TV remote and yeah. Sard dives out the window.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
What happens when you hit the pause button? The engines turn off.
I'm the one curious about the rewind.
Oh god, it's flying backwards! Why is it flying backwards? Physics says no! Why is it doing this?
Madman says yes.
I'm not hearing a dead Pac-Man.
Oh.
He must have gotten extra life.